on board the spacecraft. The crew executed that thing there. We continued to work the problem, got the crew back into the Earth environment, believe it or not. We had to perform another maneuver, emergency maneuver, in the final 7 hours in there, which blew our electrical power profile. So now we're back trying to find some way to make up more power. And basically, we lost battery C during entry. So we lost one of our three batteries during entry.
So, Fred, yeah, Jim, sir, yeah, go. Jim.
There was one thing that was unusual. After we decided that Mission Control was going to give us the proper attitude to maneuver to get back onto the free return course, and we'd use our landing engine for that maneuver, the information was set up. We put it in the computer and I started to manually make the maneuver to get to the new position, and I learned something that I took with me out of the space program into business. Always expect the unexpected, because we were flying in the lunar module, but we had attached to the lunar module a 60,000-pound dead mass, the command service module. The command module is the only thing that had a heat shield to get back into the Earth's atmosphere. The center of gravity was not in the center of the lunar module, essentially, to make the maneuvers. It was way out in left field someplace. And therefore, in the short period of time that I had to figure out how to maneuver all over again. I had to figure out that when I put an input in, just what the output was going to be.
Use gray tape, stiff backs of checklist and whatever to build a plenum around a square cartridge versus the cylindrical limb one and attach it to the intake hose on the lunar module's side and force the air to be sucked through that, which served the purpose. And of course, there were abundance of those cartridges available from the command module. I think we replaced it once. All we did was stuck another cartridge on and gray taped around it. And we could have just kept stacking those cartridges if we had to solve that problem.
So how long did it take to get back to Earth?
Sorry, what was the mission time?
Right. How long did it take from the explosion before you got back to Earth's atmosphere?
Well, you'd have to subtract 53 from 146. I don't have my calculator with me, but yeah, this happened at 53 hours, et cetera, and the mission time was a little over 146 hours.
So when you stepped onto the aircraft carrier, gentlemen, what was the mood?
After we stepped,
yeah.
After we got home,
yeah.
Well, there's what a high elation, of course. We, the helicopter put us on the deck, and we waved at everybody, and we thought that we cheated death again.
Oh, boy. No, one thing I'll add of course, at the time we weren't too happy with North American with the performance of the command module. But you have to realize that we shut the thing off for 4 days, and it got very cold. In fact, the water tanks were still found frozen after it was recovered back on the carrier. And fortunately, the Apollo 1 fire had done a fix with a lot of, not just the hatch, but a lot of wiring and better hermetically sealing of connectors, which again helped us because the vehicles got very damp and wet. We had water, if you look behind the wall and the limb, globs of water on every turn of the wiring or a connector path for the plumbing. And when we got ready to power up the command module, Jack and I did that, and it was covered with water. We had to get a towel out to wipe off the instrument panel. And we worried about that time about shorts. And that was those fixes done on Apollo 1 that saved us. In fact, Jack, we said we first steps was to put all the circuit breakers back in, and we said we'll count down and we'll push in 6 circuit breakers only on each side, and we'll wait and see if we can smell insulation burning, and then we can pull them back out quickly and discern which one was the bad one, and that's the way we went through all the circuit breakers, getting them in, and we never had anything happen. And you think about it, frozen for 4 days, we violated specifications, certainly on the electronics equipment in that vehicle.
And the computer. Yeah.
And it worked, it came to life, And it worked perfectly. I mean, to me, it was a... I kidded the subsystem manager some of them that they over-designed the vehicle, but it was a good machine. I mean, it went through that abuse, if you will, and came back to life and got us through entry.
And that's the story of Apollo 13.
There's one last incident concerning 13. As we're coming down, and it appears that the things were working and the chutes came out and we finally slowed down and it appears that everything was okay, Swigert says, listen, let's not tell them that we're okay. This might make a good movie.
And by the way, how many of you were aware that Jim was actually in the movie? Whole new career there, Jim. You're looking for it. So that's Apollo 13. Gene, you look like you're...
Yeah, one last comment on the splashdown. Once the crew got aboard the carrier, we had a sweetheart deal with Cigar Institute of America. We went through 14 boxes of cigars there.
So 13 made it. Joe Engel, yeah, was on the backup crew for 14. And later on, he got bumped off 17. You really seemed to get a bump that wasn't fair, because anyway, especially off of 17. But tell us about 14. How successful was 14, and what was its mission, Joe?
14 was Al Shepard's mission, of course, and Ed Mitchell, and Stu Rusin. And I happened to be with Gene Cernan and Ron Evans at the backup crew for Apollo 14. So we were continually nipping at their heels to try and see if we couldn't get them to sprain an ankle or turn a knee or something. We did. In fact, Al set up a kind of a crew retreat at a friend's cabin in Colorado, and Al did things right always. We got there, and there were six Kawasaki mountain bikes there for us to ride, and Ron and I looked at each other. Gene and I actually looked at each other and said, "Here's our chance," because the guys are all competitive, and we decided we would have this contest. They were in a parking lot with a dirt berm that kind of went up, and it graded off the lot level. So we tried these Kawasakis out, running up there, jumping, and seeing how far we could jump with the motorcycles, and thought, this is it. This is a good deal. We'll go to Al into a competition, and we'll just keep going until we can get him to fall or something. And Ed Mitchell, bless his old intelligent heart, the guy had, I don't know, PhD from MIT or something like that. And Ed said, well, let's see how we would do this, Joe. And so he had Gene and I out with the Kawasakis running, demonstrating how you'd, you know, hit this berm and jump and leap. So he had completely turned the tables on us. We were the ones doing the risk, and he was sitting back there laughing. And of course, it didn't work. But then we rotated around, as Buzz explained earlier. We would skip two missions and then rotate back into the prime crew. So we were the prime crew for Apollo 17, and it turned out that the program lost, or was the last three flights, Apollo 18, 19, and 20, were canceled, which meant that 17 was the last mission. And Jack Schmidt was the lunar module pilot, back up on 15 and was going to be the prime on 18, but with 18 canceled, the scientific community, the geology community were pushed very hard to have Jack move forward and put on the last flight to the moon as a lunar module pilot. And, you know, it wasn't my idea, but it sure made sense. that you have a guy with a doctorate degree in field geology going to the moon if you've got a chance to get him there. So it was, as I said, it was a disappointment, very big disappointment, but I understood the rationale behind it completely and was very proud of it. Incidentally, I don't know whether we, you know, the thing, I didn't get to go land on the moon, which I very much would like to have done, but that experience let me get close and get all the training for a lunar mission, which was totally incredible, and I think everybody in the, on the panel would agree. The education was there if you just wanted to soak a little bit of it, you could, but if there was so much to learn and so many fields, so many disciplines, that I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world. Plus, I got to know a lot better and got to work with and train with, I don't want to get gooey now, but this incredible bunch of true American heroes that you got on the stage here tonight, and I'll never be sorry for that. And Al, I mean, Al, I was looking over this way, but I wanted to include you on that too.
That's all right.
Okay.
That's all right, Joe. I'm right behind you all the way.